Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Commodore Hour is brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. Vanderbilt defeated Ole Miss on Senior Day at Memorial Gym Saturday, 75-70. And with that, we visit with Coach Jerry Stackhouse, talking about the win and what's ahead for this Vanderbilt team. Here's Stack.
Well, Jerry, before we talk about the actual game, it was so much fun for those players to have that payoff, I know, for their hard work on Saturday. The post-game locker room scene looked cool. The whole thing really was. It was just a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It was like Max, I was talking, messing with Max a little bit before the game. I'm like, man, you ain't going out like that, are you? And he's like, no, I ain't going out like that, Coach. So, yeah, it was good to watch those guys step up and, again, play together. Yeah, we had some mistakes, but I thought we just continued to fight. You know, we were doing a really good job on the defensive end of scrambling and covering each other and made enough plays on the offensive end, guys. Got into the paint, sprayed it, and we jumped up and knocked down some shots. So it was definitely fun. Some mistakes now, but again, it was good to be on the top side of it.
You obviously would love to have Scotty and Dylan out there, but how much do you think it did for this group's confidence to win that one like they did?
I mean, it's huge for those guys, again, because they're able to play through mistakes. Again, there's things that was going on out there that I wouldn't have been able to watch if Scotty and Dylan was sitting over there and I had to put them back in the game. But, I mean, I just had to, that's the best way to grow. Those guys were able to do it last year. I mean, they made mistakes and they got better from it. And, we're having an opportunity for them. I mean, guys like Isaac and Miles, just to get those extended reps right now is huge for them. And you saw their confidence grow during that game. And I think those are moments that are vital to, what we're trying to build. Those guys feeling confidence in those moments. And I think it was huge for Scotty and Dylan to see that. I mean, I think now they can see that they got more guys that they can trust, when we're getting late in the clock and they're commanding a lot of attention, there's other guys that can step up and make plays for them. So I thought it was great for our whole team.
What'd you like about the defensive effort, especially in the first half?
Well, we just wanted to dictate. We wanted to be aggressive. I mean, they run a ton of sets, and we wanted to be disruptive. I thought we did a pretty good job of switching on the ball, trying to keep the ball out the middle of the floor. Our traps were pretty aggressive. We got a couple steals out of it as the game wore on, but our rotations were good out of them. We kept them to some non-paint twos and, really, really challenged the ball when it was driven. But, and I think that when we do that, it helps our offense, because now we're able to get stops and get out in transition, get some easy opportunities. I think, Max had a few, breakaway layups, and those are just good rhythm plays for our offense once we can get some easy points on the board.
We were talking Saturday about Jordan Wright playing sort of a point forward position. How is he so effective in getting inside and either scoring at the rim or passing it out?
He's just, I think it's his size. He has ability to handle the ball. I just got to try to get him to be a little more concise with those dribbles. I think make sure that he's going downhill and not so much east and west. He's really good when he goes downhill and he plays with force, has a good feel and made some really, really nice passes, just reading the defense and seeing where the help was coming from and where they were trying to cover from the pick and roll. And I remember vividly one that he made, a spray that he made to Max in the corner. I mean, that was just a big-time read. So he's getting better. I mean, he had some moments where he looked like Magic Johnson, a few moments where he looked like Tragic Johnson. So hopefully we get a little more of the of Magic coming out, but I was, he's a great competitive man. He, you could just see the emotion there, and those guys, felt it coming down the stretch, and it was good to watch.
Cleavon's three-pointer and the free throws at the end, I thought those were some of the highlights of the season. I know you probably did too for him, certainly.
Yeah, no doubt. It was fitting. If there was ever a fitting moment for senior day for Cleavon to step up and knock down a big shot when we needed it, and ball found his hands again as we went down the stretch where we haven't been good at the free throw line. But, he stepped up and made 3 out of 4 and preserved the win for us. So it was really, really happy for him, man. Really happy the tribute that they had to all those guys before the game, the family speaking on them. And, I mean, it was just a great day, great ending to a great day.
I thought our guys did a pretty good job in dealing with the traps near midcourt. I know you talked about this a little bit. What's key when you're trying to stay away from the wrong spots on the floor and make those good decisions right there?
Those is one of those things where we, against a, kind of a, three-quarter trap, you don't want to get into those spots, but we just kind of figure something out with that defense that it helped us to get across the timeline, and then kind of get an overload situation. And you know, we had worked on that, and the first few times we did it, we just act like we had a brain freeze for whatever reason, and then, the play didn't flow, and then once we did it, we got two corner threes exactly like we thought we would. But it's just about us, handling that, being aggressive with it, ball fakes. I mean, I think that's the key to beating any trap, because any good trapping team, they're going to move with the ball, and when the ball moves. And if you can give a couple ball fakes and then get them to shift a little bit, then it helps the receiver have a little more time to catch. And I thought we handled that pretty good. Then they kind of fall back to a 2-3 zone, and we're much more comfortable of attacking that with our zone offense.
I thought Braley taking that charge was one of the key plays in the game, and that's one of those that won't go in the box score but is really important. That's a lot of what he's able to do for this team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Braley's just, he's one of those guys that gives up his body, probably our best perimeter defender, can guard the ball on his own sometimes. So I think that was, we go offense to defense for him, especially when we're playing the smaller guards. It gives us a chance to be a little bigger on the defensive boards, as well as just, him being able to switch more, make our switching partners a little better. You look at guys like him, Jordan, DJ, Max, even Cleavon in that group. All those guys are what we like to consider, switching partners, guys. We don't mind them switching, and I think that gives us a lot of versatility going down the stretch. And then, and like I say, he's a really good passer too. He made a couple of really nice passes. And if you leave him alone, he's not afraid to shoot. I got to get him out of that one 3-pointer a game. It's like, it's okay to make two or three of them. So
it's usually from the same spot too, isn't it?
Yeah. He's gonna get that one. And he's like, okay, my day is done. But man, come on, we need a couple more from him. But I think he plays within himself, and I think that's what we all we can ask for him. But there's an opportunity for him to step up and give his body for the team. Him and Trey are two of the best that we have.
LSU is next, coming up on Tuesday. They've lost a couple, but they're still one of the best teams in the league. They have three players combining for 55 points per game, led by Cameron Thomas. They have Smart and Watford. What stands out about that group?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably as close as you're going to look at and see. What you see, NBA length and talent kind of combined there, are guys that are really talented offensive players that we have to be aware of. I mean, I think they probably more so than any team that I've watched, they can make plays off the bounce. They take long, deep threes off the bounce, where a lot of times you want to give a guy cushion because you think he's handling the ball. We really got to get up and pressure these guys because they're comfortable 3 or 4 feet behind the three-point line. So, we like I said, most nights in the SEC, you got your hands full, but I think, we'll work on a game plan to feel that, we can try to contain them the best we can. And obviously, I think if we set screens and, smart in attacking their switches, we can be able to have success on the offensive end.
May not be able to enjoy any of it on this particular trip, but are you a Cajun food guy?
I am. I know I'm going to hit New Orleans at least once a year, man. I got a couple of Acme down there.
That's yep, I've been there.
All those spots down there on Bourbon, man. I hit them up, so I'm a gumbo kind of guy.
Yeah. What are your favorite dishes?
Definitely gumbo is one. I'm a big oyster guy, so I do that. I love it down there where they let you make your own cocktail sauce. You get the Worcestershire and all the horseradish and all that. But pretty much all that. Brennan's is one of my favorite spots down there. Coach Smith used to take that when we would go to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Man, that was the first time I had Bananas Foster. And if I ever see it on the menu for anywhere, you can best believe I'm getting a little Bananas Foster after dinner. Even if, and I'm not even a big dessert guy, but that was spoiled for me. So yeah, I'm definitely into the New Orleans, Louisiana cuisine.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. One more before we go. On Saturday, I asked you about your shoes after the game, and I want you to know I had a couple people say, man, that was my favorite part of that interview. So you got thumbs up from the listening audience there.
Yeah, man, try to, you know, be a little fashion forward with my drip. And I said, I got to make sure my drip is right. But nah, it was something I pulled out the closet, man. I tried to, like, cause I told you, I really like the sneaker feel now with my suits. I just feel a little bit more comfortable on the sidelines. So now I have to, not only do I have to make sure my tie and pocket square combination is pretty good. I gotta line my sneaker game up now. So it's a little more work for me with my game planning for, you know, between that and basketball, but we find a way to make it work.
Look good. Jerry, thanks so much.
Appreciate you, Ken. Thanks.
It's Coach Jerry Stackhouse joining us here for Commodore Hour. We covered a lot of ground right there. Vanderbilt at LSU tomorrow night at 7:30, pregame at 7 o'clock with Learfield IMG College. When we come back, another guy's got the drip going on. He is Vanderbilt baseball GM and chief of staff, Brooks Webb. He's going to join us for the next couple segments, and we'll talk about the good start for the Vandy boys. That's up next. This is Commodore Hour. We'll continue right after this. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on this Monday night. Of course, Vanderbilt baseball off to a terrific start at 6-1, a weekend series against UIC coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. No midweek game this week, and we are thrilled to be joined by Brooks Webb. He is the Vanderbilt baseball general manager and chief of staff. He comes up and joins me for a couple innings on radio. We do the Vandy Boys pregame show before home series, so a lot of fun. Brooks, what's going on, man?
Hey, Kev. I feel like this is the first day I haven't seen you in person in maybe a week or so, so I guess it's good to hear your voice. You just can't get rid of me.
Maybe we need to do like a video chat every morning or something, a Zoom call, so we won't feel lost.
coffee together.
That sounds like a plan. This group, you got to like the way they bounced back after the Friday game against Georgia State. First loss of the season, 4-2, but came right back on Saturday, took the lead early. It was a close game, got the win there, and then two more games yesterday in 12-2 and 17-6, got the job done and won 3 out of 4 in the series.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no one ever likes to lose a game, right? But I think at the same time, baseball being such a long season, and we just have a very young group. You know, Corbs has said that a few times about just the experience that continues to have to come for these guys, both with our lineup and with our pitching staff. And you're going to get that in this non-conference schedule, which we scheduled the opponents tough for a reason. We always try to do that because you learn a lot about your group during that period. You're trying to figure out a way to piece your lineup together and figure out where guys can contribute. But playing 7 games in 7 days is really tough. You know, when the schedule got kind of turned upside down with the Wright State series, with all the ice and the snow, that presented an opportunity for our group to learn a lot about them. And I think we played a tough Georgia State team. Those guys came in here with a lot of energy and a lot of talent, but was impressed with the way that our pitching staff, how they kind of answered the call in those close games. And obviously with the offense kind of putting Friday behind them and responding with the ability to find a way to scrap out that winning run on Saturday, but the offensive explosion that you saw on Sunday. So, yeah, I think there were a lot of things you could take away from this weekend that we were excited about.
Of course, the performance of Dominic Keegan has been one of the big stories through this first week. I mean, his numbers were just off the charts. 10 for 15, 4 doubles, 3 home runs, 11 RBIs, 8 runs scored, and 6 walks. And that included a grand slam yesterday. What a start for that guy. And SEC co-player of the week as announced this afternoon. So that was a cool honor for Dominic.
Well, he's just, you know, he's a kid that everybody loves. Dom is one of the hardest workers that we've had in the last several years. And you know, he started 2020 with an injury, and he was working his way back from that. And he was really just starting to come into his own when that season ended. And what I admire about him is that he's always been a very diligent worker, but as soon as he had the opportunity to get into a summer ball league after our season was ended, he went right away and played as much as he possibly could in the Futures League, and he was one of the best players, if not the best player in that summer league. So he's constantly working on his craft. He's constantly working on that ability to become a better player. He came to Vanderbilt as a catcher. He still has the opportunities to catch, but I think first base has been a path where he's embraced and has worked very hard defensively over there to make himself into a first baseman, which he hadn't played a lot as an amateur, but the bat just continues to improve. He's using the entire field, and I think the work that he's done with Coach Baxter and Coach Macias is just so noticeable, really, in the fact that he's using the entire field, Kevin. That's something you and I talked about in the fall a lot, and we talked about it in January, but he's getting himself into good counts, and when he gets a pitch to hit, he's not missing it. So really happy for Dom, and obviously he's moving in the right direction. A long season, but he's gotten off to a hot start, and I think he's somebody that, you know, we'll need in the middle of that order to continue having success as we move forward.
And speaking of catchers, CJ Rodriguez had a good game in game one yesterday, drove in a couple runs in the first inning, double, and scored one later on. And then in the second game, Maxwell Romero got the start. And when he went into his at-bat in the fourth inning, he had not recorded a collegiate hit. And from there, he hit a solo home run. He had a three-run double and then a three-run homer. So it was fun to watch the guys respond, you know, to Max, you know, getting that opportunity to get in there and really just having his best game to date at the plate. He was fantastic in game two of that doubleheader last night.
For sure. That catching group in general, CJ and Max, and we mentioned Dom, and you've got Jack Bolger, who came here as a catcher, and Alan Espinal, it's a very deep catching group, and they complement each other so well. But that's what non-conference play is for, is to take advantage of the opportunities when you get them. You know, we unfortunately lost Cooper Davis for a couple of weeks when he went out in the first game of the season, and Jack Bolger slides right in and starts playing left field, which is probably not where we necessarily envisioned him from day one. He's taken that and he's run with it. He's hitting leadoff right now, and he's doing some nice things as a freshman. But you talk about the catching position, and over the length of a 56-game-plus season where your body gets worn down, and if you have two, three guys you can trust, especially with a power pitching staff that can also handle handle themselves in the box, which CJ and Max, you just mentioned, did this weekend, you have a lot of confidence in that. And when, you know, Brownie can run any pitcher out there and say, I don't care who's catching, CJ or Max, that gives him a lot of confidence in, you know, whatever the lineup is, knowing that he can trust whatever pitcher's throwing that day, that there's going to be a leadership component that happens behind the plate, that they're going to block, they're going to receive, they're going to be able to control the running game, but they're also going to be able to handle the stuff, whether it's a rocker or a lighter or a Lebokie, whoever it is. You just have that comfortability amongst, as a pitching staff and a pitching coach, that whoever's behind the plate is going to get it done on that given day. So happy for CJ and happy for Max and the success they had this weekend. But they'll both be impactful players for us as we go along.
So twice in this first week, we've seen doubleheaders where Kamar Rocker pitched the first game and Jack Leiter pitched the second game. I said after last Monday, we'd probably never see it again. Well, we saw it again within less than a week. I thought yesterday what stood out, one of the things in watching Kamar Rocker start was the success of throwing the cutter, and we saw it several times in the innings that he was in there. And then Jack Leiter, on a game where he just didn't blow everybody away like he did against Wright State, he did a good job of just doing enough to get out of trouble and keep them off the scoreboard.
Yeah, they both had really good starts, I think, you know, against Wright State for certain. But where they grew, I would say, from week to week is just Kumar's ability. He got through that fifth inning this time around where he didn't against Wright State. And then Jack, like you said, not having his best stuff and just finding a way to battle through. And with those two guys, the natural talent is going to get a lot of hitters out, just pitch to pitch and at bat to at bat already with the velocity, the fastball location, that sometimes they can get by without having their sharpest stuff. And I think that's where, with a guy like Jack, who probably threw more balls yesterday than he would have liked, is someone that when he can be very efficient with pounding the strike zone, getting those first pitch strikes and kind of putting hitters away in four, five pitches or less, he's going to be someone that can go deeper into games. And I think that's the same thing with Kamar. So you're just looking for growth with them from week to week. They're certainly on pitch counts right now at this time of the season, but as they start to grow and as they start to have their pitch counts go up, you're going to see them start going deeper into games. But they're, you know, you have to think too, Jack's a guy who's never thrown in an SEC game, and Kamar, I think, would probably tell you that 2020, he was a little bit up and down. So they're still learning and they're still growing too, despite all the notoriety coming into the year. So they just want to be the best versions of themselves as we get into conference play and beyond, and really just keep getting better each outing.
Our guest is Brooks Webb from Vanderbilt Baseball. We'll have more with Brooks when we come back. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Catch Nashville Predators hockey all season long on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back. This is Commodore Hour. I'm Kevin Ingram. Great to have you with us. And we are joined by Brooks Webb, the Vanderbilt Baseball General Manager and Chief of Staff. Commodore's off to a 6-1 start. No midweek game this week. UIC will be here starting on Friday. And, you know, Brooks, we were talking about pitchers before we went to the break. Sam Loboke got the start on Saturday, went four innings, and I talked to Tim Corbin yesterday. So said they felt like you know, he did a good job in that role. What do you envision his role being as we get a little deeper in the season? You start to figure out some of those things.
Well, it's probably a little premature to kind of decide what his role will be, but I referred to him many times as just a Swiss Army knife type pitcher. He can do a little bit of everything. He's got the abilities to lengthen out an outing where he can give you, you know, potentially four, five, six, maybe even seven innings, but he also can come in out of the bullpen and get you out of a jam. And he's someone who bounces back quickly as well. So you saw him throw in the Wright State Series, I think, on Monday, and then you see him come back and he makes his start on Saturday and was very effective. And he's, you know, he's kind of Houdini in a way. Up in the booth with Jeff on Saturday, he worked his way out of another base-loaded jam that, you know, he just has this uncanny ability where when it gets tough, he finds a way to just buckle down and get out of it. So he's someone that as a freshman last year, nobody's really talking about coming into the season, and that's not because we didn't know how good he was, but he was just a little bit of an unknown commodity. But he's a guy that we were really happy to get to school. He played at Harvard Westlake out in California, which is traditionally a baseball powerhouse. They've got several guys in the big leagues, and they play a high level of baseball. So we knew when you're getting an ace from that program, you know, they've got guys like Jack Flaherty and Lucas Giolito and Max Fried in the big league. So when you're getting an ace from that school, someone who's been through it and played that competition, we knew that, you know, there's a learning curve for everybody, no matter where they come from. But he pitched in big games, and we knew when we got him on campus, he was going to be someone who would make an impact right away. So I'm excited for him to see kind of what role he takes on and embraces, but whatever it is, he'll be ready for that challenge. I have no doubt about that.
And Brooks, it's been great to see Hugh Fisher back. He pitched the eighth inning yesterday and was out there against Western Kentucky back on Wednesday. But, you know, it's been a long road back for him after surgery. You know, he hadn't pitched since the 2019 postseason, but I know everybody around the program's just thrilled for that guy.
Well, easily the most exciting moment of the year, I think, for everybody in our building, just because we all care so much about him. And, you know, when he injured his arm in the summer after the 2019 season, I remember getting a call and I was in an airport headed somewhere and I was just heartbroken for him because he is so talented and he does care so much about his craft. And he's a big part of our locker room, but he was a big part of our bullpen and had some huge outings in that 2019 season. And, you know, going into his draft year, that was disappointing, but glad to get him back. You know, he probably could have, if he wanted to, could have left last year even in the shortened draft because he was so highly rated going into the 2020 season. But he wanted to come back, and you know, we're lucky for it because he is he's a leader for that pitching staff in many ways, and he's taken a lot of guys, especially last year. I think that was the thing I was most impressed about was when he was injured, how many guys he took under his wing and how he was trying to find ways to help the younger guys, but even the older guys too, on, you know, what tells they might be giving away and how, you know, what he saw from the lens of someone who wasn't pitching every day and couldn't be throwing every day. And you learn a lot about kids when they're away from the field and the game's taken away from them because of an injury and how they can still contribute to your environment. Hugh really embraced that role last year in 2020, but, you know, he's someone that when you get a guy back like that as an academic senior and you start to see how the younger kids gravitate to him and kind of follow his lead, and he's not the only one who helps lead that staff, but he's a big piece of it. So for him to come back and have success, knowing how hard it is to rehab and just every piece of the puzzle that goes into that, you know, the mental and physical difficulties, you feel really good when you see someone go out there and kind of get that first time behind them. But yeah, he'll be someone that as we go forward, you'll see in some big spots. You'll see Hugh Fisher coming out of that bullpen quite a bit.
Our guest is Brooks Webb from Vanderbilt Baseball. And yeah, I want to go back to something you were just talking about with Hugh Fisher, and, you know, and as a guy who knows as much about pitching as you do, talk about tells. Is that sort of always something you're looking at and you're worried about and you're watching video of yourself and just making sure you're not giving anything away?
Yeah, I think everybody's always watching for it. You try to self-scout it as much as, you know, as much as you can. But I also think that, you know, when you're in your bullpen settings and you're in your scrimmage settings, you're trying to, you know, help out your teammates and tell them what you see, and getting feedback from your own hitters when you're facing scrimmages, because they're usually the ones that are going to tell you, you know, they're going to have the best angle that an opponent's going to have. So you're always cognizant of it. I think sometimes it's more overblown. A lot of people think they have tells when there's really nothing there. But, it's certainly something that you have to be mindful of, because everybody's always looking for an edge. And, yeah, I think it's a part of the game that's been around for a long time, and it's not ever going to go away just because of the human nature of pitching and the physical pieces that go into it.
And it can be anything, can it? From the way you breathe to the way you hold your glove. I mean, there are lots of different things.
Yeah, I've heard guys before, and, you know, our hitting coach, Coach Mike Baxter. Baxter does such a great job and played in the big leagues for a long time and played here at Vandy, and even, you know, Coach Macias, and got us all up to AAA. So these guys have played at a very high level as hitters, and, you know, some of the things they've said about tells and what they've seen and what they – you know, what they've encountered as players, but also the crazy theories of what people think they have. I think you get two ends of the spectrum where everybody's always trying to outthink someone else. But, yeah, it can be a little bit of everything. It could be something, you know, on the body. It could be something with the hands. It could be breath. It could be how they're gripping the ball before they go into their glove. It can be a lot of different things. But at the end of the day, it's about lining up and just trying to play the game. I think that's what where that stuff kind of gets blown out of proportion a little bit.
You know, Brooks, back to the current team, the middle of the lineup seems like it's sort of a work in progress at this time of year, isn't it? It's the same guys mostly, but you're moving them around a little bit just to see who works in which spot over a longer period of time.
Yeah, the whole lineup is probably like that to some degree, but the middle of the order is always going to be looked at, whether it's, you know, someone like Isaiah Thomas, Tate Colwick. We mentioned Dominic Keegan earlier. You know, Cooper Davis was probably like your bona fide leadoff guy coming into the year, and he's down right now, obviously, with the injury. So you're just trying to find pieces that flow and where you can give yourself the chance to just pass it from guy to guy to guy, and then you have someone behind them that can, you know, move runners, you know, to home plate. That's the name of the game, right? Score runs, they don't ask how. And I think that's what we talk about a lot with our offenses. Finding guys that can get on base and give you really good team at bats. And, you know, in 2019, we led the country in home runs, but that's traditionally not what a Vanderbilt offense looks like. It's more well-balanced. And, you know, that was a group that I wouldn't even call it a power-hitting group, even though they led the nation in home runs. It's a really well-balanced group. J.J. Bode hit a lot of home runs, but he also hit a ton of doubles and a ton of singles all over the field. Austin Martin tapped into some power toward the end of the year, but he could spray the ball all over the field, and if he put a ball in play, he had a chance to beat it out. So I think that's what you're looking for, is just kind of a holistic order where 1 through 9, you feel like you're putting pressure on the defense, but you certainly want to have some thump and in the middle there. And you saw, you know, Colwick had a home run this weekend. You saw Romero, you know, have the blast. Carter Young had 2 home runs this weekend. So there is some power kind of placed throughout the order. Now it's just finding those guys who you feel like are going to be able to give you more of the consistent kind of gap-to-gap drive-in runs and not give away at bats that can help produce in that middle part. But at the same time, you're also trying to figure out, you know, can somebody like Jack Bolger be a guy that sticks at the top? Does Enrique Bradfield work his way up, or does he kind of fit where he is? Can Jason Gonzalez move up and be more of a middle-of-the-order guy? So that's exactly what these games right now are for, is to figure that out. And if you think back to 19, Kevin, you and I had a conversation about this one night watching a scrimmage, I think. It took 2 or 3 weeks into SEC play in 2019 for that team to really find yep. their 1 through 9 and their offensive identity, and Cooper Davis was had a pretty well established role on that team before he went down with an injury in that season, unfortunately. And Pat DeMarco missed some time with an injury, and when he came back, he never left the lineup and was part of some of the biggest plays down the stretch. So in baseball, just like any sport, it's next man up, but I do think it does take all of non-conference play and then probably a week or two of your SEC season to figure out what you've got and where the pieces to that puzzle fit.
Brooks, next we will see UIC in here on Friday, and You know, I always think it's got to be hard for teams up north to get in the work this time of year unless you have some nice indoor facilities where you can get inside and get some stuff done. But they've come here quite a bit in recent years, and they've been successful when they've come here. What do you expect out of that group?
Well, they do have a really nice indoor facility. So Curtis Granderson is an alumni of there and had a big part of building those guys. A really nice facility from what I've seen. And we're familiar with UIC because they come down here quite a bit. We've played them a lot in the last 10 years or so. And they, I think, went on the road down to South Florida to play FIU the first week and lost that series, but probably should have taken, I think, game two of that series. But they're a tough group, and we've had some good series with them in the past. They were a regional team back in 2017, and that was my first year here, and I distinctly remember them taking that series from us and thinking how good of an opponent they were for a non-conference team that hadn't been, you know, outside much and seen live pitching much. But we also knew when they left here that we weren't happy losing the series, but you knew that was a team that was going to win a lot of games. And you look back at the series history with them, there's been a lot of extra inning affairs, and they're a team that they're not going to be blown. They play a tough schedule every year. They're not going to be blown away by the SEC or Vanderbilt or the Big Lights or anything like that. They're going to come down here and play their style of baseball. Mike D, their head coach, he's been there for a very long period of time and is well-respected through the industry, and they recruit a certain type of player, and there's a toughness factor that I think they'll bring down here, and it should be another good test for our group as we continue to grow. And it's a little bit crazy to think about that we only have two weekends left of non-conference play, UIC and at Oklahoma State. So just a few more tune-ups for our guys before we get into the thick of Southeastern Conference play.
Won't be long. Brooks, thanks as always. See you later this week, man.
All right, Cap. See you soon.
All right. That's Brooks Webb from Vanderbilt Baseball. He's the general manager and chief of staff and always terrific joining us here on Commodore Hour. When we come back, we will have Bernard Wilson, who was an all-SEC defensive back at Vanderbilt back in the 70s and played in the NFL, played in a Super Bowl. We will speak with Mr. Wilson coming up in just a moment. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Every week we always enjoy having an alumni from Vanderbilt Athletics to talk about their career and what they're up to now. And, of course, the Black and Gold Club, so much a part of what goes on at Vanderbilt. You can get all the info you need at VUCommodores.com. This week's guest is Bernard Wilson. He was an all-SEC defensive back at Vanderbilt back in the 70s, played in the NFL, mostly with the Philadelphia Eagles, including a trip to the Super Bowl. Bernard, what's going on this evening? You doing okay?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thank you very much for asking.
I guess, first of all, when you think back to your time at Vanderbilt, what stands out about that period of your life, you know, back in the 70s when you're playing football and having so much success there in the secondary with the Commodores and on some teams that were good teams?
Well, the thing is, I think about, you know, the coaching staff we had. They were great coaches and my teammates. You know, they were great teammates. And, you know, coming all the way from Florida to Tennessee, that was a big experience for me. So those guys helped me adjust.
Now, Bill Parcells was part of the staff at that time, right?
Yeah, he actually recruited me to Vanderbilt. Bill Parcells was going to Vandy, and he recruited me. He knew that back then, I thought I was a basketball player. So I was kind of hanging out for basketball scholarships. And so Bill Parcells knew that. And so he contacted me and actually came into my home. He did. He was impressed.
Now, sometime as someone who spent time with Bill Parcells and Dick Vermeil, were those guys as different as they would seem to be?
Dick Vermeil was more emotional. Bill Parcells wasn't quite as, I'm sure he was emotional, but he held it within. Dick Vermeil, you know, there were many times that he actually shed tears.
Yeah, I can remember after they won the Super Bowl with the Rams, I was in the press conference, and he did so then, too. That was not an uncommon thing for him. Now, you know, going back to your start in the NFL, explain how the scouting of Dennis Harrison might have gotten you a look by the Philadelphia Eagles.
You know, I'm not sure how that happened. All I know is that Bill Parcells contacted me, and actually came into my home, and I told him I thought I was a basketball player back then, and he persuaded me otherwise. And so I signed with Vandy.
You know, what stands out about, you know, when you think about the Eagles and your time there, what stands out about that 1980-81 season, which I'm old enough to remember, and saw the Eagles beat the Cowboys in the NFC Championship and get to that Super Bowl for the first time against the Oakland Raiders?
Unfortunately for me, I mean, beating the Cowboys was like, it was like beating them and eliminating them from the, because they were America's team. I don't know how they got that recognition, but that's what it was. Back then, they were America's team, and everybody was pulling for Dallas. And so, I mean, beating them was in itself pretty special.
Our guest is Bernard Wilson, an all-SEC defensive back at Vanderbilt back in the 70s, played in the NFL, and played in the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles against Oakland back in Super Bowl 15.
Right.
Now, I read an article that you said the two-week break between the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl really wasn't a good thing because it was hard to ramp it back up after that big win that you were talking about against Dallas.
Well, I think there are so many, you know, so many people that come in and your family get involved. My preference would be that we would play the next week. I mean, because that's what we had been doing. You think about that. The whole entire season, we were playing week after week. Even in the playoffs, we were playing week after week. And all of a sudden, we go to a two-week dead, well, it's not a dead period, but a two-week period. My preference would be that they play it the next week.
When you look now at this Vanderbilt program and Clark Lea taking over, you know, chemistry and camaraderie can really be important in having successful football teams, as you found out in your career. What do you feel like are a couple of keys to Vanderbilt finding success now?
Well, see, the thing is, I haven't been falling as close, Vanderbilt as close as I used to. My kids ended up going to UT, so I didn't want to cause any problems in the household, so I kind of strayed away a little bit.
Gotcha. Now you have some very successful kids. Tell us what they're up to.
Well, my oldest daughter is a surgeon. She's at Vanderbilt. My youngest daughter, who's the next child, she is actually in Atlanta. She has a PhD. She's a professor. And then my son is here. He's a general contractor.
Now, you worked in real estate for a long time. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. They've done well for themselves.
Now, you worked in real estate for a long time. How did you turn something you enjoyed into a successful business there in real estate?
I was more concerned about providing housing. As a player, I invested in real estate, but I also, when I invested in real estate, I ran into people that need good housing. Some people was renting people houses were not doing it properly, I didn't think, anyway. I was one that, you know, I took care of the tenant. I think the tenant's important. Some people don't think. They think that the income itself is important, but I think that, I guess my background helped me in that respect.
Do you still keep up with some of your former teammates from Vanderbilt?
Not as much as I used to. I like to do more, but I plan on increasing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess to finish up, you know, you played a lot of games on that old, hard, artificial turf back in the day. Do your knees remind you of that when you get up in the morning?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that or the bad turf I played in Philly. Boy, for me, it was, hey, we went from one bad turf to the bad turf in the NFL. Because that turf in the NFL in Philadelphia Stadium was horrible. Because they also play, baseball there, too. So,
sure. Mm-hmm.
It was not very good. Very good.
Yeah, that stadium was.
Vanderbilt wasn't very good either.
Yeah, that stadium in Philly was known for that turf. It was like concrete. Mr. Wilson, thank you so much for the time. Really enjoyed speaking to you this evening, and I hope it was all is well with you, and hope we can catch up with you again down the road.
All right, thank you very much.
Have a good night. All right, that is Bernard Wilson. He was an All-SEC defensive back at Vanderbilt back in the 70s. Played with the Philadelphia Eagles and played in the Super Bowl against Oakland as the NFC champion, as he talked about, as they defeated the Cowboys to get to the game down in New Orleans. We're going to take a break and come back and wrap things up in just a moment. This is Commodore Hour from Learfield IMG College. Don't worry.
Wow, what a great game plan. Let's go down to the locker room and see what Coach has to say.
Okay, team, let's start using the winning play, 83 green.
Hey, Coach, what's 83 green?
That's the number you call when you need heating or cooling service. The guys in the green trucks at Air Conditioning Service, where the customer always wins.
Call 83 green and win with Jim and Chip Red's winning carrier team for 57 years. With 83 green, you turn to the experts. Carrier and Air Conditioning Service, call 83 green.
The SEC taught us that it's easy to love winning, but that the best of the best know where to look for the win, even in losing. Because setbacks are an inevitable part of almost any endeavor, and the hardest lessons are the ones that teach us the most. As the official bank of the SEC, at Regions, we believe every day is a good day to dig deeper. What has the SEC taught you? Join the conversation with hashtag SEC Lessons. Regions Bank. Member FDIC.
Our coverage of Vanderbilt athletics rolls along after this word from your local station on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Hey, Jared Stillman here to tell you about my most recent experience with moving. Everybody, including me, hates moving. Well, that was until I found my friends at TriStar Moving. That's right. At TriStar Moving, you'll get five-star service through the entire process. There's a reason their motto is TriStar Moving with five-star service. Everything was taken care of, from covering the floors, banisters, railings, the front door, the threshold, the door itself. And they wrapped and protected all of the furniture in my house and put all the TVs, you know I got a lot of them, in protective boxes. They even offer storage services in case you need a safe place to store your stuff. They do it all. The owners, Garrett and Robert, are true Nashvillians, and they care about helping the community in any way they can. So if you're in need of a move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call at 615-640-1219 or visit their website, nashvillemoving.org/radio. That's TriStar Moving, 615-640-1219, or visit them at nashvillemoving.org/radio and tell them Jared Stillman sent you for 5% off your entire move.
Take us wherever you may go with the Game Nashville app.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour. About to finish things up on this Monday evening. Thanks to our producer, Steve Goldberg, and also Max Herz right here in Nashville helping us get this thing rolling. A few things going on. Mentioned basketball tomorrow night at LSU. Men's basketball pregame at 7 o'clock. Tip-off coming up at 7:30 here on the Vanderbilt Sports Network. And baseball Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at home against UIC. Players in the NBA keeping track of Saben Lee. 21 minutes in a 109-90 loss for the Detroit Pistons against the Knicks. Did have 9 points and 4 assists. He's played 13 games, averaging 6 points per game with a career-high 21 against Orlando last Tuesday. Aaron Nesmith, 18 games for the Boston Celtics, averaging 15 minutes, 4 points per game, 35% from three. Darius Garland having a good season for Cleveland, 42 minutes on Saturday against Philadelphia in a win, 25 points and 9 assists. That was a season high for him in points, averaging 6-2-5 and 38% from three-point land. Luke Kornet getting some playing time for the Chicago Bulls, 12 minutes on Friday, a loss to Phoenix, season high 11 points and 5 rebounds and 3 blocks, 3 out of 4 from three-point land for Big Luke. He's played 9 games this season. And Damian Jones has now signed with the L.A. Lakers. 8 minutes yesterday in a 117-91 win for L.A. 8 points and 3 rebounds in his first game with the Lakers. In tennis, the women's Commodore team ranked number 10 in the country. Now 10-1 with weekend wins over Auburn and Alabama. The men's team is 4-5. Tough start to SEC play. They also played Auburn and Alabama over the weekend. Men's golf finished second out of 15 teams of the LSU Invitational. Women's golf team playing down in South Carolina. And on the pro tour at the Puerto Rico Open, Will Cordon tied for 27 at 9 under par. It's going to do it for Commodore Hour. We will talk to you next week. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Commodore Hour. Tonight's show was brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. The preceding was a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.